Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 40 in the series, entitled The Hero of the Tanya, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning. We're in the middle of Perek Yud Gimel, the 13th chapter of the Tanya, Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, or page 36. We are up to the fourth line from the top, Va'af Mi Shebeteiros Hashem Chafetz. In the beginning of this chapter, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Alter Rebbe, analyzed that human being who, in a sense, is very similar to what we call the Rasha. The Rasha is the wicked human being, literally, and we define this person as being similar to the Rasha in the sense that in the essence of his character and personality there is evil and negativity. But despite the fact that he is defined kirasha, that concerning who he is and the depth of his personality there are dimensions, aspects and attributes which make him identical to a Rasha, to a wicked person, nevertheless, how does he actually live his life? He lives his life consistent with the way how a Jew should live his life, consistent with his ultimately true and deeper self, consistent with the ultimate truth of life, which is the godly soul and consciousness that exists and is embedded within the psyche of every Jew. And this personality is defined in the chapter, in the previous chapter, as the Beinoni, the intermediate man or the ordinary man, who despite the fact that he is defined Kirasha, with which the Alter Rebbe explains the statement of our sages in Masichta Nida and Gemara, that the soul, before it ascends to the earth, an oath is administered to it, you should be a tzaddik, and you shouldn't be a Rasha. And even if the whole world tells you that you're a tzaddik, in your own eyes you should consider yourself kirasha, as if you were a rasha, similar to a rasha. And he explained this to mean that even a human being who has achieved perfection in his behavior, in his thought, speech, or action, that does not indicate that the essence of his soul is pure and morally perfected. Rather, in that sense, he can be very similar to a rasha. And he should always consider himself that way. Because the fact that his behavior is pure does not mean that his entire essence is pure. But nevertheless, he should realize that the fact that he is Kirasha does not hinder, even an iota, the fulfillment of his role on earth and his mission in the world and living as a Jew should live. And now we'll continue inside further. Okay, I said Kirasha, that he's similar to a Rasha in the sense that his essence is evil. His true essence is not evil, his true essence is godly. And he's always aware of that. If his true essence was evil, if you'll say that his whole essence is nothing but evil, and his behavior is totally inconsistent with who he is, it wouldn't work, ultimately. The idea is that every single human being possesses a nefesh elikis, a deeper essence which is godly. And the ultimate scheme of things relative to the nefesh elikis, it's superimposed. It's the scab on the wound, ultimately. But nevertheless, in his day-to-day experience, his animalistic, egotistical soul is inherently part and parcel of who he is as a human being.
That would be the message, that no matter what wishes that the person has done, he still can come back.
Yeah. There's every single human being or every single Jew. Every single human being possesses a soul, a nefesh, and that soul has in it a godly spark, which we discussed at other times. Even Klipas Noga has that. But the specific model he is discussing here about two distinct souls is unique to the Jew. So every single human being has a soul, and that soul has godliness. The same type of soul, no. Va'af misha b'teiras Hashem cheftze v'yega b'yemon v'layla l'shma. Even if once entire aspiration is in Hashem's Torah, which he studies day and night for its own sake. Till now, he was talking about a Beinoni, a human being who's a Beinoni. But nevertheless, most of his involvement is in mundane issues and mundane matters. So of course he devotes time every day for spirituality, for godliness, for prayer, for Torah study. But nevertheless, the bulk of his day, the bulk of his schedule, is his occupation and his concerns with physical issues, with mundane realities. Even a human being whose entire aspiration is in Hashem's Torah and he studies it day and night, and not studying it for egotistical reasons, lishma, for its own sake. And as the Alter Rebbe defined in chapter 5, the definition of lishma is that he studies it in order to connect and to create a relationship with the Almighty. Because studying Torah is the most powerful weapon, the most powerful tool through which man can create a bond with Hashem. Because Torah is the instrument through which one's mind ingests and digests and becomes totally pervaded with Hashem's wisdom and mind, which is one with Him. And this is what motivates him to learn Torah. So it's not just a person who's learning Torah because he enjoys the wisdom in it, or because of arrogant reasons, or whatever. He's studying it lishma. So studying it lishma means that there is a perpetual godly awareness. Ein zuei chachiklau. So this is still no proof, whatever. Not just ein zuei chach, ein zuei chachiklau. That the evil has been dislodged from its place, from its own place, where, from its own comfort zone, where it lives, where it exists, where it thrives, or in the Tanya terminology, in the chol hasmali shebelev, in that poor little left ventricle, it has not been dislodged at all, it has not been displaced, it was not exiled anywhere. Ela yachilies. Perhaps, rather, it's very possible, that the essence and substance of the evil, essence and substance versus expansion, extension, projection, are in their full strength and might. It hasn't been diminished even an iota, in its abode in the left part of the heart. Rak, vaseist. He's dealing with a person who his entire day and night is characterized by spirituality, by godliness, by holy pursuits. So he says, Rak, except, shalavushav, the garments of the evil, shehe machshava diburu maisa shal nefesh ha-bahamas, namely the thought, speech, and action of the animal soul, einon mislapshim b'mayach v'hapeh v'hayadayim u'shari v'aryagot, are not invested in the brain, in the mouth, hands, and other parts of the body to think, talk, or do that which is an expression of the evil of the animal soul. The garments of the animal soul, the garments of this evil which is in the ventricle heart, that does not express itself in his life. They do not express themselves in his life. Why? Because they don't exist. Because there's no negativity in him. Because he doesn't have an ego. Because he's totally godly. There's nothing dark about him. No. He has a nefesh ha-bahamas, and a nefesh ha-bahamas is an animalistic soul. And an animalistic soul, by definition, is very earthly, selfish, mundane, egotistical, and can be very brute and crude and unholy and unmoral. However, mipnei Hashem, shenosan shlito memshala l'mayach alalev, because Hashem has granted the mind supremacy and dominion over the heart, as a result of this factor, this human being succeeds in controlling and taming the cravings of his lev. So in his heart, part of his structure, part of his emotions, part of his personality are, yes, animalistic and egotistical and unholy and unspiritual. And as a result of this, he can experience powerful lusts and cravings to that which is unhealthy in life, physically, spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, in all areas, on all levels. Nevertheless, Hashem did not force any human being to fall prey to his heart's cravings. He gave an inherent shlita l'mayach al halev. The mind has an inherent supremacy and dominion over the heart, which means that whenever the heart is taken over and overwhelmed by a specific lust or craving towards a certain direction, every human being has the ability to reflect, not to act impulsively, but rather to act in a reflective fashion, to evoke, to awaken his mayach, his mind, to realize what is right and what is wrong, and not to fall prey to the lev's craving. The mayach, if it's tapped into, if it's accessed, always has the power to dominate the heart. Not necessarily to silence it, at least certainly not forever, not necessarily to get rid of it, but to dominate it, which means that the lev should not take control of his life. The mayach should take control. V'lachein, therefore, as a result of this dynamic which is inherent to the human being, but which this person constantly employs, because the fact is there, but we don't necessarily employ it, use it. As a result of him using it, nefesh ha'likis shebamayach, the divine soul in the mind, Maishalas Biriktana, rules over the small city, the small city being throughout the Tanya a metaphor for the body, Eivare Haguf Kulam, over all the parts of the body. Every part of the body, whether it's the eyes that have their challenges, the ears which have their challenges, the nose. Once the guy at the Balatanya, the Rav Shneur Zalman, one of his a wealthy friend of his, an admirer of his, once brought him a present, a beautiful silver Shmek Tabak box. And it was very, very common that, especially the Eastern European culture, Jews and non-Jews, aristocrats, would take a snuff of tabak to revive them, to relax them. So this person bought a beautiful silver, magnificent aristocratic container to contain this tabak snuff. And he presented it to Reb Shneur Zalman. So the Alter Rebbe says, a person's body has so many organs, and every organ on a day-to-day basis has so many challenges, so many obstacles that threaten to vanquish it and to utilize it for something which is coarse, which is grub, which is unholy. He says, there's one organ which is innocent. The nose. The nose doesn't have any major challenges. So he says, und das will man echt verstoppen mit der Teive. And these people also want to schlep down, want to pull down to something mundane. So he's not going to use it. He's going to use it for his tefillin, for the tefillin of tefillin sharash, the tefillin that we put on the head. You have to see if it's in the exact spot between the eyes, b'nei necha. So he took the top of the box, of the tabak container, which was silver, it was like a mirror, and he removed it, and he used it for every day to check his tefillin. Parenthetically, there was once this story was said in front of the Tzemach Tzedek, the Alter Rebbe's grandson. So the person who retold the story said that your grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, broke off the cover of the container from the rest of the container. The Tzemach Tzedek corrected him. He said he didn't break it. The Zayt is nishkeven shayach tzebrechen. My grandfather did not have the ability to break. He wouldn't break anything. What did he do? He removed the thread that connected the top, the cover of the box of the box. Anyway, so Eivarei Haguf Kulam, all of the organs, every organ has its own challenge. And some people, certain organs, pose different types of challenges and obstacles to them. But as a result of the Shlita, of the dominion, of the Mayach al Halev, man has the ability to ensure, to secure his mental and spiritual integrity, and to create a fortress that only the divine soul should be allowed, granted permission to enter into a small city and actually take over the organs. Sheyiyu, that they should become, making them, the body's organs, levusha merkava, a garment and vehicle, l'shloishes levusha ha-sheyislapshubam, through which its three garments should be expressed, through which the divine soul's three garments should be expressed. Shehem achshava dibur ha-maisa shotayag mitzvah satayah. Namely, the thought, speech, and action of what? What type of thought, speech, and action expresses the identity, the cravings, the ambitions, the vision of the Nefesh HaLikus? Thought, speech, and action of the 630 mitzvahs of the Torah, and everything that is connected with these mitzvahs.
You're saying man has the dominion of the mind into the heart. What about woman?
I said that man has, possesses inherently a dominion of mind over heart, the supremacy of Mayach over Lev. What about women? Of course, what's the question? Because they're more emotional than men. This concept of Mayach Shalat Lalev, not only also, I think you should ask the other way around. Men, with all their big Mayachin, and their all big reflection, when their Lev gets on fire, it's all over. All their Meichen, the Meichen gets deep buried in the, gets buried very deeply in the ground, very often, with all their abilities to intellectualize everything and philosophize. When it comes, you see, Meich Shalat Lev is a very serious thing. It's not Meich, when you feel good about it, you'll do it. Meich Shalat Lev means that your Lev is pulling you somewhere. And your Lev is pulling you, and it's a real hard pull. The gravity is really tight, and you have to fight the gravity. It's not so easy. Yeah? So the Alter Rebbe says the gravity is pulling you towards the earth. So the Alter Rebbe says that despite everything, there is a force in man which is beyond gravity, which is not affected by gravity. And that's Mayach. It can soar beyond the realms, the parameters that are controlled by gravity. The Mayach can access the Nefesh HaLikus. That's where the Nefesh HaLikus dwells, and make it the leading factor in one's life.
And the Kli Zion,
its quintessence,
is Limud HaTorah.
The Kli Zion is Limud HaTorah, yeah? You have to know, the Mayach has to be used. The Mayach has to be used.
When all the dominoes are down, that is the Kli Zion.
Of course, yeah. Why over here suddenly does he mention, you're asking, Ibn Hashem Shanasan Shlito Memshala Lamayach Al Alev, about the person who's learning all day? Over here, the Mayach Al Alev model comes back in. The beginning of the chapter, when he discussed the challenges, the Beinoni has, the two Shaiftim, what did he say? How is the Nefesh HaLikus victorious? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei. Hashem helps him. Hashem gives the Nefesh HaLikus an innate dominion and superiority over the Nefesh HaBahamas. Kanal, as he mentioned, like he discussed in chapter 12, where he mentioned both aspects, Mayach Shalat Al Alev and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei. Over here, he's back to Mayach Shalat Al Alev. So we discussed these different issues last week at length, but I'll just say one point, and that is, in order that there should be Mayach Shalat Al Halev, there has to first be a Mayach. And I don't mean only physically, that you have to have a mind and a brain. What happens if the mind agrees to what the heart is doing? So you say the mind dominates the heart. The mind agrees with the heart. The Mayach, first of all, has to disagree with the heart. The Mayach, in other words, has to know, has to be aware of what's right and what's wrong. And that awareness has to be a powerful one, a serious one. In other words, man has to realize that, yeah, my lev is pulling me in one direction, but my mayach unequivocally and absolutely says, no, this is not the right thing, this is not the healthy thing, or conversely, this is the right thing, this is not the healthy thing. After that, the mayach has to decide, okay, I'm going to fight for this. Not just enough, the mayach says, hypothetically, it's true. It's nice as an abstract ideal. The mayach says, I want this ideal should be implemented. In other words, the mayach has to produce a will to go ahead. Now, the mayach is struggling with the lev, because the lev says, I want this, and the mayach says, I want this. Zagdal Terebbe, the mayach is going to be victorious. In the beginning of chapter 13, he was dealing with all types of beinonim. A beinoni who could be very much involved in worldly issues. So when his lev is taken over by a craving towards something unholy, to something immoral, it doesn't begin with mayach shalit al lev, because his mayach also is involved in what he's doing. So he first has to access the mayach. It's not just you're dealing with a lev, a mayach, there is a battle between them, and let's introduce the mayach. The mayach has to be ignited. The very awareness of what is true and what is untrue in life has to be introduced into this human being's life. There is an intellectual challenge here, not just a challenge of a battle between the mind and the heart. And this is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps. That despite the fact that the mayach is not on fire with the Nefesh HaLikis, man should be able to contemplate, to reflect, and to reach this true awareness. Over here you're dealing with a person who's learning a whole day Lishma. That's why he emphasizes the word Lishma. What does Lishma mean? He has a constant awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has a constant awareness of godliness. So the moment the lev, yes, taken over by a taiva, by a craving, the mayach is screwed on right. But nevertheless, what has to happen is the technique of mayach shalat al alef. The mayach should dominate the heart. Some more details in this issue we discussed last week, but this is the general idea of it. In other words, on all levels, whichever level a person is standing, he has the ability not to fall prey to his lev. But it could be different steps on the ladder. It could be step number one, step number two, step number three. So mayach shalat lalev is one issue. That's the bottom line. You need mayach shalat lalev. But sometimes before that, the person still needs help. That the very mayach should become imbued with a godly awareness. So we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem gave godliness a superiority over ego. He gave light a superiority over darkness. That despite the fact that we're subjective human beings, and we're animalistic human beings, and our minds could become animalistic as well. Mayach shalat lalev. People use their minds for the most destructive things. So let's have a mind doesn't result automatically in beauty, in holiness, in spirituality. It can, but it doesn't necessarily. The mayach could be totally dominated by the behema also. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei, that if you reflect truly, you're not forced, your mayach is not forced to get caught up with the subjective self. Your mayach has the ability to rise beyond the shackles, beyond the parameters that enslave the human being and make him subjective, and realize and access the truth. Accesses nefesh elikis. When the mayach accesses that, and is ready to fight for that, then, Alter Rebbe says, I promise you, mayach shalt lalev. Your lev will go berserk. But if your mayach is consistent, your mayach knows what it wants, it doesn't have to become enslaved to your heart. Not by nobody. So this is the technique that this human being uses, not to allow the evil which is in him to take hold of his life, to control his life. However, in its essence and substance, the divine soul ain la shlito memshala al mohusva al mohusvatz musa. Shel nefesh ha-bahamas ha-beinoni has no preponderance over the essence and substance of the animal soul in the case of the beinoni. The nefesh ha-likis does have control over the expressions of the nefesh ha-bahamas, over the garments of the animal soul. But concerning the essence of the animal soul, the nefesh ha-likis has no power and dominion over it. Rather, the nefesh ha-bahamas in its place has not been dislodged, and it's there in its full strength. Kiyim, except at those bishah, at those times, sha'ahavas Hashem hu bihisgalus libay, when his love for God manifests itself in his heart, be'itim izumanim on propitious occasions, k'may b'sha'as ha'tfilu v'kayetzibu, such as during prayer and the like, which has mentioned in the previous chapter that there are propitious times when even the Beinoni can experience godliness on an emotion, in a very concrete emotional manner and fashion. Usually throughout the day, even this Beinoni, who is apparently involved day and night in spirituality and godliness, that's not the case. That's not the case. He understands what's right and what's wrong. He has his convictions established in a very powerful and healthy way. But what is happening with his eye, with his emotional self, not just with his intellectual self, with his subjective self, he experiences a dichotomy between a transcendental self and an egotistical self. And that economy is a conscious one. And it affects him. It creates cravings, impulses, on all levels, in his relationships with other people, in his relationships with himself, in his relationship with his family, with his world, with his God, that are negative. Nevertheless, he has a mayach. And the mayach dictates how he should live, so he doesn't allow the lev to express itself. But the lev is still torn. The lev still has evil in it. Then there are certain times in the Beinoni's life, like the time of prayer is a propitious time, Rav Shneur Zalman explained before, where the Beinoni can relate to godliness not just as an intellectual truism, not just as an ideal to live by, not just as a powerful conviction, but rather as an emotional experience. This is what I want, this is what I celebrate. Where godliness becomes not only an issue of the mind, it becomes an issue of the heart. Where it's not only an ideal, where it's not only right, but it's also what I love and what I want. And those are unique moments in the Beinoni's life where godliness is not only intellectual, it's emotional. And it's a very powerful emotional experience. Then, even the essence of the animal soul has been dominated to a certain degree. Even in the lev, in the abode, in the comfort zone of the nefesh ha-bahamas, he has infiltrated and he has introduced a godly awareness, emotional awareness, a godly reality. In other words, the cravings and the lusts at that time are to godliness, to spirituality, to idealistic things. You want to know if it's a special kind of tefillah? You mean which soul you could get this tefillah?
Yeah, all right, well, you want
to
go.
I doubt too many, to be honest. No, this is every tefillah. The time of tefillah. By a Beinoni, tefillah is very important. Why? Tefillah, I told you, is when we spoke a few weeks ago, when the battery is recharged. All day he's involved in what he is involved, yeah? But it's not easy, this. You see, everything he's talking about, it sounds beautiful. It's not easy. When push comes to shove, the lev is very powerful. And physicality is extremely overwhelming and powerful. We're indulged in materialism, and that captivates us. It captures us. So the Beinoni, davening is extremely propitious. That is the time that he redefines his status. He redefines his stand, his priorities. And he has to do it every day. Tefillah is not, you can't do it once a year. He has to do it every day. Because the onslaught of materialism is so powerful that without tefillah he can easily fall prey. He has to create that internal dynamic every day where godliness becomes a powerful, true, aware, it becomes a powerful, true reality in his life, not only intellectually, emotionally. He relates to it on a level. This is who I am. This is what I want. This is what I feel. Then even after davening, when the feelings dissipate, when the Nefesh HaBehemah is back again, in full swing, nevertheless, the mayach, which has been deeply affected by davening, and the lev has also been affected by davening, allows him not to fall prey to the lev, but to live a life which is healthy and moral.
So I would say that the lumen of the has a koyach, mayach shalom al alev, and therefore the person is able to maintain being a beinoni, not to give into this machshav deep ma'aser. We're talking about now the deeper states of tefillah, we have the ability to nishana, not only.
Yeah, b'shas limud ha-tairah, his mayach is good, but his lev is still nefesh ha-ba'amizdik. B'shas ha-tefillah, he's saying, even the lev becomes God. And this, every human being can experience. There are certain times that every person feels that he wants to embrace spirituality and godliness emotionally, not only intellectually. We feel good about it. This is what I really want. A person has this manat filah. Sometimes it's manat filah, sometimes something else occurs, where we feel emotionally good about it. We don't want anything else. Sometimes something we hear, sometimes we experience, a certain joy we experience in our life, this becomes our emotional state. But it's only at certain times. Va'av gamzei sapam. Even then, even during this time, when the divine soul gains the upper hand over the anima soul, even in its essence, ein rak shlito memshal levad. It is limited to preponderance and dominion alone. The divine soul, in other words, succeeds in dominating the animal soul. Kidiksiv, as it's written, concerning the battle between Yaakov and his brother Esav in Parshas Toldos, Ula'oim ila'oim yemotz, and the might, the strength, shall pass from one nation to another nation. And our sages interpret it in the Gemara, and Rashi brings, Kishazekam zanayfeil, u kishazekam chulu. They comment on this verse, when this one rises and prevails, that one falls. When that one rises, the conclusion is, this one falls. Huh? Chulu. He says chulu, he doesn't conclude, this one falls. Yaakov and Esav represent allegorically the two forces, the two consciousnesses that exist within every human being. The animal soul, the egotistical, the earthly, selfish soul, represented by Esau, and the godly, transcendental, idealistic consciousness represented by Yaakov. Rivka was pregnant, and as the Torah describes in the beginning of Parashat Tellus, Vayisraytsu Abanim Bekirba, it was extremely difficult. The battles, she felt a very powerful turmoil and tension within her womb. And it disturbed her. So she went to the prophet, Vayomer lo Hashem. Hashem communicated to her the message. Shnei goyim bevitnech, there are two nations in your womb. Ushnei le'umim mimayich yiparedu. Two distinct nationalities shall separate from you. Ula'oim eloim yemotz, and the strength will pass from one nation to the other nation. And in the chapter 9, the Alter Rebbe described as this pasuk encapsulating the eternal battle, both on the collective global level between Yaakov and Esav till Mashiach comes. Two perspectives, two approaches, two philosophies. And in the Tanya, and what is emphasized in the Tanya, the very same battle on a very individualistic, local level, so to speak. The Yaakov and Esav within every single human being. I told you then, they asked the question, why was Rivka suddenly content? What's the difference? She was very bothered by the turmoil. She went to the prophet. The prophet says, there are two nations. Huh? Shame. Vayomer lo Hashem. Shnei goyim. So what? It makes it easier. Yeah. Shame was still alive. It says she went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shame. Malki Tzedek is mentioned previously by Avram, but Shem was still alive. Yeah, Malki Tzedek is Shem, but I'm saying the term Malki Tzedek is mentioned earlier concerning Avram Avinu.
Right.
So why was Rivka was disturbed of what's going on? The pain, the turmoil, the uneasiness, the disturbances, and so on and so forth. So now she knows there are two nations, Izvas. So it makes it easier. But as we when we understand the nimshal of what's being conveyed here, we get the message. A person feels in his life two opposing forces that are dragging him to two opposite directions. On one hand, we feel at times very spiritual, very godly, very moral. So we feel like Rivka felt at certain times, our souls are gravitating towards the Beis Medrash, towards the yeshiva. It says when Rivka would go by synagogues or Torah centers, Yaakov would seek to leave the womb, to enter. And a person feels that at certain times. It might be once a year, it might be Yom Kippur. But a person sometimes feels, and when he feels that, that sensation, it seems so internal, inherent, eternal and true. And then several hours later, he walks by another type of building, which is the antithesis of the first type of edifice, and the soul is gravitating towards that direction with the same intensity, with the same power, with the same passion, with the same fervor. Rivka says, Gewalt! It means I'm not a human being. It means I'm worthless, I'm nothing. And a person feels that. You see how the dishonesty in yourself, the deception, when you spiritually, you feel so spiritual, and then it's all over. You're a behemoth. And that's what you're interested in.
Not her, but the baby.
But I'm saying in the nimshal, in every human being. And same is true, a person does a mitzvah, he does a good thing, and he feels good about it, and then afterwards he falls down. Spiritually, emotionally, and vice versa. So the prophet tells her, Shnei goyim bevitnech. There are two souls within you. There are two consciousnesses within you. And they're both very true. Not one of the souls is an illusion or a fantasy or a dream. They're both very true. The godly soul is very true, but the animalistic soul is also very true.